Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from around the NFL. A little bit of news today. Texans linebacker Jadeveon Clowney did not agree to a long-term deal by yesterday's 4 p.m. deadline to sign players who had been franchised. No trade in the works for him either, according to ESPN. So Clowney is expected to miss most, if not all, of training camp. He has still not signed his franchise tender worth $15.97 million for the upcoming season. Texans tagged him as a linebacker rather than as a defensive end. The NFL Players Association expected to file a grievance against the Texans over that issue when they assigned him as a linebacker using the franchise tag on him. Falcons and star defensive tackle Grady Jarrett beat the deadline yesterday. Jarrett agreed to a four-year extension, terms not disclosed. Sources told ESPN the contract's worth $68 million. They had until 4 o'clock yesterday to agree to the deal. Suspended former Steelers and Raiders wideout Martavis Bryant has formally applied to the NFL for reinstatement, a source told ESPN. Bryant sent an email to league officials over the weekend requesting reinstatement from an indefinite suspension imposed back in December for his repeated violations of the league's drug policy. Bryant, former fourth-round pick of the Steelers in 2014, just 27 years old, but he has missed 36 of a possible 80 regular season games because of his suspension. Hockey news, the Sabres yesterday announced they've signed their first-round draft pick, Dylan Cousins, to a three-year entry-level contract. He was picked by the Sabres in the first round, seventh overall of the 2019 NHL draft in Vancouver at the end of June. Bison's homestand continues tonight. They host the Charlotte Knights. 7:05 first pitch at Salem Field. Last night, Charlotte beat the Bison's 9-7 in 10 innings. Game one of the week-long homestand. Left-hander Ryan Borucki is on the mound for Buffalo tonight, his second start for the Herd. And former British Open champion and Portrush resident Darren Clark will hit the first tee shot to start the British Open early Thursday morning. He won the Open in 2011. It's the first time the British Open has been in Northern Ireland since 1951. Are you pumped for the British Open, Steve?
I kind of am. I love golf. And
yes, I know that.
I play it and I watch it and I'm a fan and all of that stuff. So, yeah. And the Open Championship, I think, is a special tournament. All the majors are special. You know, the Masters, of course, for its tradition and for the field and for that it's on the same course all the time. The U.S. Open, because I think it's the hardest golf tournament to win on the planet. And the Open Championship is because of the birthplace of golf, and it's a different brand of golf. It's links style golf, and there's a million ways it's different than kind of the golf we play most of the time here in the States. So it's fun. I enjoy it. Really enjoy it.
You did not mention the PGA Championship.
You know what? I have a hard time getting excited for that. That's more the players, the pros themselves, kind of like that that championship for one thing.
They moved it this year to what June it was, right? The Masters in April. The Open was
right. It's already happened. The PGA's already happened.
And I wonder if that kind of, because they moved it, to me it almost has diminished its importance, its relevance. It's like, well, if you can move that, if it's not the same tournament it has always been in August for my lifetime, maybe it's not as important. I don't know. The PGA Championship does seem to be the fourth of the four, right? The four majors.
I think so, yeah. I think so. I like the Schwab Cup playoff things more than the other. Because it's kind of a bracket, and they kind of cut it down, and you got to keep playing good. So
they'll have fun this week in Northern. My nephew is there, and one of my best friends from Lockport is going with a couple of guys to watch the British Open. They're going to have a great time, right?
All right, I'm leaving. You know, I'm not in Thursday, Friday. It is not because of the Open Championship.
But if you could, you would. That'd be fun to go to the Open Championship in Ireland.
I've visited Ireland. I've taken one trip to Ireland for an anniversary kind of trip thing. Was my wife and I and another couple. It was one of the all-time great trips ever.
I gotta go.
It was awesome over there.
I gotta go.
It was awesome. I would love to go to the Open Championship. As of this moment, it's on my bucket list.
Okay, mine too. Hey, we had a great conversation yesterday after the show. We stayed after. Steve and I, and did an interview that we're going to play for you right now. George Wilson played 9 years with the Buffalo Bills, came here as a off waivers, really, from the Detroit Lions. He was an undrafted free agent with Detroit, played his college football in Arkansas, you know, came in as a wide receiver, spent a lot of time on the practice squad, and then 2.5 years, this is an amazing thing, we'll talk about it with him, 2.5 years into his career, George Wilson switches position from wide receiver to defensive back, became a safety, started a safety, made some big plays. Steve and I sat down with him yesterday, a conversation with former Bills safety George Wilson. Here it is. George Wilson, one of the all-time favorites with us here today, in town this week to talk to brand-new Bills season ticket holders, members of the Rookies Club. What are you telling these people about Buffalo Bills football?
Hey, it's an exciting time to be a Bills fan. This is one of the most passionate fan bases in all the NFL, and we appreciate your support, you know, in being first-time season ticket holders. I mean, like I said, it's a lot of exciting things going on around the Buffalo Bills organization, and it's a great time to be a part
of it. These fans will respond to you. You remain, I think, a favorite among fans who remember your era here, which wasn't that long ago, really.
No, not at all. I mean, I always had a great time interacting with the fans, a lot of the community events hosted by the Bills organization. After the games, you know, a lot of fans always waited around in the parking lot or waited by your vehicle because they knew their players that much. They knew what they were driving. And, you know, just to get that personal interaction, you know, not just after a win, but after a loss as well, to kind of pick you up and uplift you and let you know that their support is unwavering.
Yeah, you were here for 8 years in Buffalo, and one of your signature moments happened on that Monday night game against Dallas. And it's interesting because as a player, I always think about this. It's like a third play is early in the game, right?
Yes,
it's like the first series. You pick off Tony Romo, boom, and you're into the house. And all of a sudden, you know, you're thinking, wow, we got – here we go, you know, and for players, because you're always going to these games like, wow, we got to play well. Then when something happens like that good, it's like a big stress relief.
Absolutely.
Say, okay, okay, let's go now. And that play, three plays in, you pick Tony Romo off and take it to the house. That changed the dynamic of the expectations of everybody in the building.
Absolutely. I think it was one of the first Monday night football games aired from here in Orchard Park.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The stadium was electrifying. I mean, the fans have been out there all day. And you know the Bills Mafia, you know, they're going to be energized and wired and ready to go. And to get that interception and pick six in that first series, I mean, it just electrified the crowd. I mean, there was such an aura throughout the stadium. And I think we ended up getting about 3 or 4 more interceptions off of Tony that night.
Right.
Just unfortunately, we was unable to finish off the job. You know, I believe Dan Bailey kicked that 53-yarder to snatch it out of our grasp at the end.
Kicked it twice after
twice.
It came out.
Twice. I mean, who does that? Who does that?
That guy.
That remains, of all the games I've broadcast, that remains one of the most disheartening. And I sat in the,
I
told
agree.
You, in the radio booth for a long time thinking, how did that one get away, right? It was right there.
Right, absolutely. I mean, that just goes to show you, you know, the quality of caliber quarterback that Tony Romo was. A gunslinger, always focusing on the next play, the next pass, the next series, and he was able to will his guys and lead them to a victory, unfortunately, at our expense.
You're one of the few guys who's coming into the league, and I was reading your bio, you're Arkansas University, you're a Razorback, you left that school as the second all-time leading receiver in the school's history, and you end up playing safety in the NFL for all those years. For most people who listen to the show, they know I really had a lot of respect for guys who can transform their career. Lorenzo Alexander's a great example, a guy who's a 300-pound guy with his hand on the ground, turns into an outside stand-up guy with, you know, 35, 40 pounds lighter than he was. Switching from one side of the ball to the other at the point in your career when you did, really, you got a lot of help doing it, no question about it, but how difficult was that?
It was extremely difficult. The head coach at the time was Dick Geron. He came to me, he asked me would I be willing to make a position change because we had so much money invested in the wide receiver position and draft picks. And, you know, they just wanted to try to give me every opportunity to make the roster that year. And they liked my physical play as a receiver in special teams. He came to me, asked me would I be willing to do it, gave me a day or two to think about it. And I came back, I said, Coach, I haven't caught a pass. Certainly haven't caught a touchdown. And so maybe this is the opportunity I've been waiting for. And, you know, oftentimes in life, you know, opportunity is disguised as hard work, and it was certainly that. But I had guys like Jim Leonard and Kawaki Thomas who played in the defensive backfield with me to help me learn the playbook, to help me learn how to, you know, backpedal and be an actual defensive back. And then I had a position coach in George Katavalis who was very hands-on and took his time to really show me, you know, how to study, how to break down film and things like that. And like it was a collaborative effort. You know, I can't take credit for it. Like I said, this organization afforded me that opportunity where other organizations probably would have just pushed you out and just replaced you with somebody else.
And you went from being a wide receiver who probably, given the roster makeup of the Bills at that time, you probably would not have played for the Buffalo Bills. You may not have had a 10-year career in the NFL, and all of a sudden, but your willingness to do that and put in the hard work, it turns into a really sweet little 10-year career.
Absolutely.
You ended up with a couple years of the Titans and put in a lot of great years here in Buffalo. And you that kind of goes under, gets pushed aside by a lot of fans. They say, hey, that's George. He's a safety. He's a special teams guy. That really is the hard work that goes into what makes a player put together a nice career, is the hard work.
Absolutely. I mean, I tell people all the time, if I don't make that position change, my career is over.
Right.
You know, and that's how timely of an opportunity that was. I remember John Guy was the pro personnel guy at the time. He pulled me in his office. He had his dry eraser board with all the players who had – there was like, let's just say there was like 100 guys that was in their third year. Well, the list that was in their fourth year was probably closer to 10. You know, right. There was more players than that, but he was just trying to show me that this is a pivotal year in my career, and in order for me to sustain my career and give myself a chance to continue playing, I probably need to embrace this opportunity and change positions. And I just say I had a lot more fun on defense than offense.
George Wilson.
It's a lot more fun being the predator than being the prey, I can tell you that.
We're with former Bills safety George Wilson. And to make that change, George, it had to mean a different skill set for you physically, right? I mean, you had to learn to backpedal. You had to learn the proper tackling technique. How much of the physical change was important to you back then? How much of that was
very drastic of a difference. I mean, you know, I had to bulk up, you know, protect my right. shoulders, making all those tackles. Learn how to take on a 300-pound pulling guard, you know, to set the edge for the defense. But a lot of it was mental, John. Like, you had to play with an edge on defense. You know, you have to be able to anticipate and react in a fraction of a second in order to make a play on that football or to get off the field on third down. And so it was a lot more film study going in. You know, as a wide receiver, you know Steve.
Right.
You know where you're going. You know, the right. defense has to anticipate based on your alignment, based on the formation, based on the quarterback's drop, you know. So you know where you're going on offense, on defense. You got to do a lot of film study, a lot of preparation to be able to anticipate those plays. And that's the difference between being average, being good, and being great are the players that can carry over that film study and make plays on game day.
You mentioned Jim Leonard, who's now, we talked about it before we went on, a defensive coordinator at Wisconsin. He was playing then. He was your teammate. What did you get from him as a teammate as far as making that change?
Man, Jim Leonard taught me how to study my playbook. He taught me how to learn the plays and be able to recall those assignments, you know, without much thought. You know, he helped to simplify the playbook for me. And he took me by the hand, knowing that I was playing the same position that he was playing. It was something that was very selfless. And when Jim was playing with the Jets, and I was still here in Buffalo, you know, the first time I saw him, I went up to him, I gave him a big hug, and I told him, thank you, brother, because you didn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. And that just shows the brotherhood, the fraternity of being an NFL player, the quality of person that he was to be able to train someone that's going to compete with him for the very same job. And he ended up going somewhere else. And so several years later, I ended up doing the same thing for Denora Searcy,
right.
You know? And so it was my duty and my obligation to do the same thing for Denora's as Jim did for me. And I hope that other guys in the NFL around the league do the same thing in order to preserve this fraternity. It's not about a competition. It's about making sure that we put the best product out there on the field, and we give each other the best chance to succeed and provide for our families.
Now, certainly there was a whole new skill set to learn at safety. There were, you know, different techniques. I mean, it was just the reverse. You know, certainly a wide receiver has a lot of technique, how to release and how to do run their route at the top of the stem, how to come out, what angle, and how to plant your feet and hold your shoulders and hand place, all of that stuff. Did that knowledge from the receivers, I got to think that helped you. Once you switched, there were certain things like, well, wait a minute, here's what they're thinking. You could almost say, in this situation, here's what this receiver's thinking. And that could almost help you as a defensive back and certainly maybe be the one thing you could contribute to a guy like Jim Leonard.
Man, that paid great dividends for me, Steve. When I made that position change, I had to ask myself, okay, what do I know right now that can help shorten this learning curve for me. I only have one offseason essentially to make this transition. And so I said, I know offense. So I know wide receiver splits based on where they're lined up, whether the routes they like to run, whether the depths of the routes based on the quarterback's drop, what coverages based on the coverage that the defenses are running, what's the weakness of the coverage, where do we try to attack it. And so I tried to apply what I took, what I gathered from being on the offensive side of the ball to help apply that to the defensive scheme, how we were trying to attack, you know, the weaknesses of the offense, and just the synergy and the merging of those two things really helped me to shorten that learning curve and be able to get on the playing field sooner than later.
Talking with George Wilson, former Bills safety in town to talk to members of the Bills Rookie Club, new season ticket holders. George, you mentioned Dick Geron was your head coach, and then Chan, you played here with Chan.
Mm-hmm.
Not tremendously successful years for the team, but you had some highlights, and I imagine you had some games, and we talked about the game against the Cowboys, but games and moments where you thought things maybe had turned the corner a little bit for the Bills.
Yeah, absolutely, especially I guess that was maybe the 2011 season. I think we jumped out maybe 4-1.
Yeah,
right.
And beat the Patriots here at home, ended that long drought of consecutive losses to them, and we were really well on our way. I think some injuries slowed us down, and We didn't have as good of a second half of the season as we did the first half, but you know, certainly you know, we definitely built up some momentum early on, and there's a lot of excitement around the Bills at the time.
How many guys do you keep in touch with from those days? I know you finished your career in Tennessee. Where are you living now?
I still have my home in Atlanta, Georgia, mm-hmm. but I also have a farm property in my hometown of Paducah, Kentucky as mm-hmm. well, so I'm splitting time between both places, and I see a lot of guys. I mean, I'm in an investment group. It's called Fifth Quarter Investments, and it's Angelo Crowell's our president.
Sure.
London Fletcher's our vice president. Takeo Spikes, Nate Clements, Terrence McGee, and Mario Hagan. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have an investment group. All former Bills. And, you know, to be able to continue our relationship off the field. And, you know, we always talk about our time here in Buffalo, how we all connected initially. And it's just a great platform for us to be able to have a second career where we're pooling resources and sharing the risk and investing in businesses or starting our own businesses. And so I keep up with them, Marcus Stroud and few other guys, you know.
You played with some good defensive players.
Oh, man, some great guys. Yeah. I mean, when I tell people, you know, some of the names that were here when I first got here in 2004, I mean, we had Pat Williams and Sam Adams.
Man, and some guys.
I mean, we really had a juggernaut on the defensive side of the ball. And but the great thing about that, I had true professionals to get to know, to follow their examples, and to really teach me how to be a pro, which allowed me to, in essence, do the same thing for the younger guys as I got older.
While you played here, George, you became, I don't want to say the spokesman for that defense or the team, but you were in the media a lot. I'm going to take credit for it. I think I was the first one who called you the senator, right?
I think you were, Murph.
Yeah.
I think you were, Murph.
You were like the guy. You were the guy, the go-to guy for the media back then, right?
Yes, sir. And that's just, I try to give an honest assessment. I was accountable to my own actions, plays that I made, plays that I didn't make. And not just saying what sounded good, but saying what needed to be said. And
you were a truth teller.
Yes, absolutely. Not avoiding the tough questions. And yeah. I think that's why, you know, members of the media took a liking to me, you know, just because I was a straight shooter and I wasn't going to give them a BS answer on just a question that was, you know, easy to avoid or to duck.
So I was a guy. I called you the senator. And
I think, yeah, Murph, you can take credit for
that. I want credit for that.
Hey, absolutely.
I elected you to the Senate.
And you did.
Awesome.
You did.
So, Murph and I have been sitting here. We do this every day, and we talk about the Bills, the Buffalo Bills, and you said you know, you've been asked back to talk to the Rookies Club of brand-new season ticket holders. I want to ask you, you know, you live in Atlanta, and you spend split time between there and Paducah. How close do you stay attached to the team? How much attention do you pay to what the Bills are doing? And we've said, this is the most optimistic 6-10 team from a year ago ever. How optimistic are you about the Bills and what they're doing?
I mean, I'm excited about the direction the organization is going in. It's been always been sound defensively. Looks like we have our franchise quarterback to be able to build around. I was very excited a couple years ago to see the playoff drought ended. And, you know, just to see the players continuing to buy in and press forward And anytime you got the support of the Bills Mafia and the Buffalo Bills fan base, you know the sky's the limit. I really see us really breaking through that threshold and really becoming a consistent playoff team. And I think this organization deserves that. This fan base certainly deserves that. And I think the best days are ahead for this organization.
George, it is great to see you. Thank you for coming in with us today. I know fans are going to be really excited to talk with you this week while you're in Buffalo.
I was excited when I found out I was going to be on with you guys today. And you guys certainly didn't disappoint. And I'm excited to be here
it's
with you all,
It's great seeing
too.
You, man. Thanks
great to see you
in.
All, too.
George Wilson, former Bills safety, he spoke yesterday, last night, to the members of the Bills Rookie Club, first-year season ticket holders, invited to hear members of the Bills Legends community, including George Wilson. We were talking about him because we did the interview yesterday, and we've been talking about him a little bit today, and you mentioned how there's a presence about George Wilson, and I think, you know, kiddingly, we call him the senator, but you said he's almost like presidential. He has like a stature, right? Because of the way he carries himself.
Occasionally, when you're out, and I was out covering the NFL around the league, you'd sit down with guys, and they had a quality about them that they were articulate, intelligent. The game was bigger than themselves, but the game was a small part of who they were, that kind of thing. It was interesting to talk to guys like that. There have been other guys around the league that, you know, we talk about who are kind of presidential in their presence, guys who are, you know, you can see that they could have picked any field of endeavor to go into, and because they were physically gifted, they chose football, and you know, they were successful, and they're going to be successful in whatever they do. He talked about what he was doing with some of the other former players that he's played with over the years and what they're doing now in business and stuff, and you can just tell they're successful people act like that, you know? And certainly he falls into that category. It's great to see him. Just like you knew he would be, seems to be doing very well.
Yeah, good player too, right? Nine years coming in undrafted, position change. I don't think – we talked about it with George. I don't think you can overestimate what a gigantic shift that is to go from trying to make it in the NFL as a wide receiver and then being told 2.5 years into your NFL career, we want you to play safety. That's huge. Totally different skill set, right?
Yeah, and like I said, he was a pretty accomplished Division I wide receiver.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing, it's just so difficult to do because you spend all your time in meetings looking and talking about the game literally in a different language and a different point of view. And it is impossible to say how difficult that is because it's like being thrust into a different culture, a different mindset with different language all at once, and expected to play at the most elite level, be fluent, and it's really difficult to do, and it takes an enormous amount of concentration and hard work, and kudos to George for pulling it off.
Good guy to talk with. We enjoyed getting together with him and doing that interview. Hey, after quarterback, what position is most important, most critical to an NFL team? Let's get back to your thoughts on that. Give us some calls, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550, or send in a tweet. We might read it on the tweet sheet. Come on back. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, about a week and a couple of days until our first training camp show. We mapped it out today. 8 shows of training camp. Starts a week from Thursday on July 25th. You guys started something when I was out for a couple of weeks. And
while you were gone, the kids were playing around. And
that's fine, man.
All right, so we got this new thing called What's for Lunch, right? So here's what happens. We're going to give you a couple of choices, something that you would like to chow down on.
Club or sandwich.
Right, exactly. Something like that. And then other things that you're like, maybe you like it, but now you can only pick one, right? So you're going to have a choice, either a thumbs up or thumbs down, or you would
eat it for lunch or you would throw it in the garbage. Okay.
So, can I eat your lunch? Can I take your lunch money?
Like, really? Like, you're going to trade somebody, right? You're going to take them or I'll trade you this for that or whatever. Okay, so here's the thing.
That fish looks
today, over on social media, on Twitter, Golden Tate, who's played, bounced around the National Football League. He's played for the Seattle Seahawks. He's played for the Detroit Lions. And today he came out and said, you know what? Matthew Stafford is the best quarterback I've ever played with. Would you rather have, this is your choice for lunch, Murph, would you rather have Russell Wilson as a quarterback or Matt Stafford as a quarterback?
Well, now, initially, when I saw that question, I thought, well, this is easy. But the more I think about it, you know, Russell Wilson is, I'm not saying he's overcome stuff, but, like, he's a little bit undersized. He was not a first-round pick. He came into the league as not a standard, classic, stand-in-the-pocket, drop-back quarterback, but he's been very productive. Matthew Stafford, on the other hand, is kind of a classic, right, stand-in-the-pocket quarterback. And I like that about him. I like a lot about Matthew Stafford. But because of what he has done and because I think of his competitive nature, I'm going to go with Russell Wilson. That's who I'd rather have. Yeah, that's what I'd rather have for lunch. Russell Wilson for lunch. Is that
rather than yes, rather than Matthew Stafford, you're going to turn down Matthew Stafford. I'll tell you what, Matthew Stafford, to me, is a great quarterback playing on a team and a franchise that has never been able to get it together. Uh-huh. I think there's no question he's got a tremendous arm talent. He's a tough guy. You've seen him. There's the great highlight of him getting hurt. He had to come off the field, and because the other team took a timeout, he goes, hey, I can come back on the field now. Yeah. Came back on, threw the winning touchdown. Tough guy.
Love him.
Accurately throws the ball accurately.
Yep.
He's built to be successful in the way the league is legislated. Now, certainly Russell Wilson is a winner.
Yeah.
And you're splitting hairs here. But I don't have a problem with either one, but I think I kind of like Matthew Stafford better because I think he makes the guys around him better. I think Russell Wilson is good and can make plays, but I think Matt Stafford lets your offense flourish with the guys around him. So I'll take Matt Stafford instead of Russell Wilson.
Okay.
That's lunch item number one.
Okay. Oh, there's more.
Yes. We'll have a couple more. We're not going to go through all. I got a ton of them. We're just going to one. Which would you rather have for lunch? Would you rather have Ezekiel Elliott and the production he's put together and the workhorse that he is, or Saquon Barkley?
I don't have to think about this.
Really?
Saquon Barkley. He's a special talent. Just scratching the surface last year. Early pick in the draft. I know Elliott was too, but I think Saquon Barkley, on what's going to be, I think, again, a Giants team that struggles, I still think he will be a standout. And I think Saquon Barkley is maybe the top back in the league right now. I'm easily going to pick Saquon Barkley for lunch.
And why does Zeke fall short?
He's good. It's hard to say he falls short. He's good. I just don't think he's as versatile as Saquon Barkley. I don't think he's as dynamic. I certainly don't think he's a dynamic big play potential that you get from Barkley. Those would be the two big reasons, I think.
If we're talking about this being lunchtime, Saquon Barkley is a salad that's got everything I love on it.
Okay.
The right dressing, the right ingredients, and everything. Zeke Elliott is a salad, but it's got a couple of things in it I don't like. He doesn't catch the ball well enough, doesn't run routes well enough, and he's got off-the-field issues. You don't know if he's going to do something like bump a security guard in Vegas or get in trouble with the league for misconduct. He's going to get suspended for 6 games. So Zeke Elliott's good, but he's got a couple of ingredients I don't like.
I'll go along with that.
And that's why I'm not going to have – I'll go with you. I'll take Saquon Barkley for lunch as well. All right, last thing. All right, here we go. Buffalo-style pizza or New York-style pizza?
Ooh, a tough call. Because there's a lot to be said for
We've had long conversations about the best pizza and why it's best pizza and why I like a couple of different kinds of pizza than you do. Remember the stuff we had about the chain Pizza Hut?
Oh yeah.
And the Buffalo, all that.
Didn't you tell me you like Pizza Hut?
I'll stand up for it.
Immediately, you are disqualified from answering this question, from making this choice.
All right.
Look, Pizza Hut's fine, but when you get real pizza from Buffalo or New York, that's real
pizza.
Which
is it, Buffalo pizza or New York pizza?
I got to go with the home team. I got to say Buffalo, a little bit thicker. What do they call the little cup pepperoni now that everybody does? Cup and chard.
Cup and chard.
That's hard to beat. There's a guy online, the Buffalo News wrote about him, who does rating Buffalo's best pizzas, and he came up with the one it sounds silly to say, but I grew up on Lock City Pizza, the old Pontillo's Pizza in Lockport, which was number one. I mean, that is the classic for me. Yeah. Yes, Buffalo style.
And I like New York pizza, too. I'm like that. I love the size of the slice. I like the fact you can fold it up. Yeah, I like that. But you can do that with Buffalo pizza. I'm sticking with the home team as well. We'll both go Buffalo pizza on that. We'll be total homers just like we always are. But just like I always am. Last one.
Oh, I thought that was
this. This one came in late under the wire. This is a good one. So just night, you're taking two guys fresh off the press. You know what's going to happen in their career, and it's got all stretched out in front of them, right? Would you rather have Frank Gore or Larry Fitzgerald?
That's another tough one.
Hall of Fame running back.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame wide receiver. They both could be first ballots. They both had long, productive careers, consistent players. Never won the big ones. Played on some rough teams. Had some good moments. Larry Fitzgerald or Frank Gore?
Are we talking about the entire person? Are we talking about just their longevity, their career, their production?
Well, it is lunch, so you can pick and choose what you want.
I'm going to go with. I'm not staying with the home team here. And look, I've not been around Frank Gore much. Hasn't been on the show yet. But I would go with Larry Fitzgerald, just from what I know of him, what I've heard of people who work with him and guys who have played with him, including some current Buffalo Bills and guys who work with him on a regular basis. I think he is a unique, special person. Did you see, again, this is not football, but he delivered a eulogy, I believe, at Senator McCain's funeral, right?
Yes.
A couple of months ago. He was fantastic. I think the guy is a special person and a great player. He's had a long, productive career, certain Hall of Famer, a great teammate by all reports, and I think Frank Gore has a lot of those similar qualities, although, as I said, I don't know him that well. I'd go with Larry Fitzgerald.
You're picking him, and really, that's really the only difference you can pick up. Frank Gore has, at the end of his career now, 14 years as a running back, to still be in the league, and one reason he is still in the league is because of the quality of professional he is.
Yeah, I acknowledge.
Frank Gore works hard at it all the time. He shows young players how to act. He shows young players how to play. He shows young players how to study. He shows young players when to be there, how to think about it, how serious to take their craft. That's the reason Frank Gore, at this point of his career, is still being productive, and that's why he's still being asked to be productive, because he does it all. He hits on all cylinders. Larry Fitzgerald, think about the flip side. Larry Fitzgerald has been with the same organization from the beginning of his career all the way to the end. There's a little bit of cachet in that, no question about it. He's also been very productive when he had – 6,000 different guys throwing him the football. Yeah. He's had like 90 catches with Tommy Schmegmahoyten, Joey Bag of Donuts, Charlie Sixpack, all these guys that are throwing passes to him. Nobody knows who they were. And last year he had Josh Rosen fresh out of the draft. So Larry Fitzgerald has been productive as well. And he does have a certain public appearance. He does have a certain public persona. He is way outside of football as well. I think for that, for the public difference that he's made around, you might have to give the nod to Larry. But make no mistake, Frank Gore is still in the National Football League for a reason. So I think for lunch today, I'll take Larry Fitzgerald, just because of he was on one bad organization for his entire career and was prolific inside that organization.
They weren't always bad. They had a Super Bowl appearance,
playoff appearances. Yeah, when they got Kurt Warner as their quarterback, they finally got a guy that could pull the trigger.
Even if they had Carson Palmer.
I get it. But, so that's what I meant. That was what's for lunch. Murph, you did great.
I'm pretty good at lunch.
I'm pretty good at dinner and
breakfast as well.
But I like that. It's a way to get us to talk about that stuff outside of, we get a chance to talk about guys who aren't actually on this team.
Right. Yeah. I liked it. We'll do it again.
All right.
When we come back, we're going to get back to which position is most valuable in the NFL. Come on back with us. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. So we just did lunch, right? What's for lunch? Are we going to do that every day, Steve? We can work that in.
Not every day.
Okay.
A couple times a week, maybe.
You drive that bus, okay?
I could stand and miss a lunch a day or two.
Yeah, me too. You drive that lunch cart, though. Why don't you handle that?
All right, I'll do that.
I like letting you run that. Hey, we had an interesting question that's still up for discussion. wanted, and it all came about because we were talking about the running backs and some of their demands for new contracts, right, including out west in Los Angeles. Want to know from you, after quarterback, what is the most valuable position in the NFL? What do you think? Got a Twitter poll going on that with 740 responses so far, and 45% of you say a pass rusher is the next most valuable position after quarterback. 32% say offensive tackle. 17% say cornerback. I think we're going light there, folks. 7% have something else in mind. Give us a call. We'll discuss. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or send in a tweet to One Bills Live. We might read it on the tweet sheet. Call here from Mike in Vegas. Hello, Mike. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hi. How are you today?
Okay.
Good.
Good. Here's my thought. I think everybody's forgetting the fact that it's a team sport. It's important. Marvin Levy being your coach right now, he tell you every position is important on that team. That's how we were in the Super Bowl when you were there, Steve.
So you choose not to select one of those positions, Mike.
Sorry about the dogs, Mark.
Yeah.
What dogs?
What? Yeah.
No. But okay.
Not, it's like, yeah. So, Mike, you're not picking any – you don't think any position's more important?
Every position's important. You're starting with the quarterback. As the leader. But
long snapper right up there with everybody else? No, I'm just being ridiculous here, Mike. I get your point. It is a team sport. It is the ultimate team sport. But guys are paid differently. Guys are valued in one sense more than others, right? You know that.
And there's another. There's
and guys on the team, you tell me, they know that, right? You know who they're paying, who they're not.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, sure. Here's the thing, too, and this might be room for another trivia. And Mike brings up a good point. Can you build a team in any way, shape, or form, and still win? So can you have a – obviously, you're not going to have a horrible quarterback and win. But if you have – like, say, if everybody has the same quarterback, you know, how many different ways can you build a team and still win? Would you go right to a dominant offensive line, or would you go for a big-time running back? Would you need a big number one receiver, or would you go defense? Would you need a big pass rush, or would you need a shutdown corner? Would you know, we've all seen teams win games differently. In fact, you got to tip your hat to the Seattle Seahawks getting back to the playoffs with Russell Wilson. They did it on his rookie deal. They went twice, won one. Now he's an elite quarterback. They're paying him like that, and all the Legion of Doom on the other side of the ball is gone.
Yeah.
Now they're winning games a completely different way.
Yeah.
We've all seen it, but it's hard, and the Seahawks are the only team I can really kind of remember doing it. Wow, now they're doing it a little differently with the same, quarterback and same head coach, same staff. Usually you see a team change everything out, and then they go in a completely different direction. How do you start if all the positions were equal?
They're not equal.
They're not equal.
And teams, your original point is your key point there. Teams build around what they have, right? You don't have a good pass rusher? Well, we'll do something else to get around that. You're right. You don't have a good quarterback? Well, let's try something else. I mean, the Bills have been faced with that dilemma for decades almost. But
you got to find a way to do it, and consistently.
Yeah, it's hard to do.
And that was one of the big things when Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, they began formulating this culture that they've got. One word that they used more so than any other coaching staff in recent memory that have come in, they said they wanted to be sustainable, which is why, all the contracts are set up right. That, they got out from underneath a lot of contracts that were great players, but, too expensive. It was almost impossible for those players, no matter what you signed them for, the Marcel Dariuses or the Sammy Watkinses on the horizon, it was almost impossible for them to earn or be of value to the money you were going to have to pay them. How is Marcel Dareus going to earn $100 million or $90 million, whatever that contract was? He was going to have to be Aaron Donald, and he's not. So they got all that in place with the one word in mind being, listen, whatever we build here, let's make it sustainable. Much like the guys do it in New England, where they buy, sell, and trade things every year. Great players go away and they kind of replace them. They spend that money on other position groups and they do it a whole different way the next year. So the Patriots have done it a ton of different ways, although they've always had the one constant guy taking snaps. The Seattle Seahawks have done it differently now. So it's interesting to see, but the question, this Twitter poll of ours, after what quarterback, what position is the most valuable? I think the best player is the most valuable.
Right.
Right?
If you got a great safety, boom. Right?
Build it.
And I think of the Steelers with Troy Polamalu.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to make the argument then when he was playing, and even now, that you really need a key safety. You really need a great safety to build a good team. Hard to make that argument. I don't think I would be on board with that. Now, you got Troy Polamalu. Okay, he's your most important.
Or Ed Reed.
Yeah, or Ed Reed, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's some guys out there that can do it. But what happens back, you think back to the great teams of, you know, the 85 Bears. You know, Mike Singletary is a middle linebacker. He made the whole thing work.
Yep.
You know, the great defensive coordinator was Buddy Ryan, would tell you, I could do it because Mike Singletary was my middle linebacker. Mike told everybody what to do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there are singular players, and I think that's the key to this whole question. Now that we've talked in circles, you really got to do it with whatever your best player is.
Yeah.
The most productive player. That's how you build it, and that's be your most important position.
Tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. From Jack on the tweet sheet, he says, while it used to be defensive end, quarterbacks get rid of the ball so fast and know how to work the pocket to escape pressure, so having great defensive backs who can lock down wide receivers to buy time for the pass rush and keep their eyes in the backfield to jump routes and get breakups on picks, cornerback is most vital. That's why they get paid. They do get paid.
Yeah,
that's a strong argument. I think you agree with that, right?
Steve? I do. Yeah, that's what I think. I think those guys, because it's deep into a defensive play, after the quarterback drops back, one option's not there, two options not there, those cornerbacks, however deep they go, however covered up they are in the back end, makes the difference. The quarterback is scared off the throw or forced to throw it in too tight a window or just doesn't like what he sees. The play's blown up because the guy's on the outside, and certainly there's always guys chasing him on the inside, but, you know, if you can make that guy hold on to it for 3 seconds, 3.5 seconds, then it's hard to protect him for that long.
Here's one on the tweet sheet from Marty, who says, while I am not certain pass rush applies in every division, it does in ours, the AFC East. With Brady, you have to be able to disrupt him, and pass rush is the best way to accomplish that task. No one would argue with that. Pass rush, varied in your pass rush, I think. You played with the all-time great pass rusher, Bruce Smith, and everybody that the Bills played then, 20 years ago, knew that he was coming, that he was a great pass rusher. They had to answer that. They had to come up with a solution. It's different now, right? I think teams expect different. First of all, there's nobody like Bruce Smith. And secondly, teams anticipate, that guy, the right defensive end might be coming, but so might the defensive tackle or maybe a linebacker, right? I think teams are much more varied now. They were about 20 years ago.
And it comes back to the thing, you got a truly transcendent player that we've talked about. You know, you get one of those guys, that guy becomes your most important player. Lawrence Taylor for the New York Giants. We had Doug Farrar on yesterday, the book, The Genius of Desperation, that he wrote. Guys like Bruce Smith, guys like Lawrence Taylor, put the offensive line and the offensive coordinators in a sense of desperation because they have to have an answer for a guy that – there's no one answer to. You know, you can't have just one guy. You can't have just two guys. What are you going to do if they move him? You know, you've got to have a plan for those guys. And in desperation, they come up with all these revolutionary ways to deal with a transcendent player. And I think coaches, the greatest coaches I've ever said, and I said this about Don Shula for years and years, one of the great all-time coaches in NFL history, won more games than anybody. His gift as a head coach from me, from the outside looking in, I played one game for him in the Pro Bowl. By the way, I was MVP of the game. Give him some credit. So, right?
How does he get credit? Right.
So anyway.
He put me in position to be.
Exactly. So, you know, Steve, the thing I get about Don Shula and guys like Joe Gibbs and Don Shula and the great coach and Marv Levy as well, they let their players do only what they do best. They never asked him to do what they couldn't do. You get some of these coaches that are, you know, the old adage is he's trying to fit square pegs into round holes or round pegs into square holes. He's trying to get these guys to do things they're not really good at. Great coaches don't do that. And as a result, sometimes the Miami Dolphins defensively or offensively or whatever would become a little bit predictable because they didn't have guys that could stretch the field, or they didn't have a good slot receiver. They didn't have a great tight end. They didn't care. The guys they did have were doing what they did really well, and you had to defend it. And there's only so many things you could do. So that philosophy of using your players and let them flourish in what they do best really serves coaches, and that's whole philosophies have been built around that. So as far as our Twitter poll goes, I'm kind of talking myself into saying, you know, whichever guy's best at what he does is your most important guy.
Don't do that. We got to get another hour out of this.
All right, okay.
After quarterback, what position is the most valuable in the NFL? Joe in Niagara Falls has a thought on this. Go ahead, Joe. You're on the air with us.
Hey, first time, long time. How you doing, guys?
Good, Joe.
Good.
I just got to say, if you're not getting it done through the air, where's the next place to go? On the ground. And you can use the running back, you know, how many times are you going to hand the ball to a wide receiver? You can throw the ball to a running back all the time. I think that's another highly valuable one.
Why do you think running backs don't make the kind of money that many other positions do, Joe? What do you think coaches and decision makers see?
But I think that a big
what?
Did we lose you, Joe?
I just think the market's too saturated. I think the market's too saturated, and they don't command the same price. But I don't think that's an accurate reflection on how they, how they're valued.
Yeah, that's an interesting. If they're easily replaceable, that doesn't make them less valuable, I guess. I mean, the only reason they're not valuable is not because you don't need a really good one or the best one you can find. It's just because there's not that much difference from the best guys or the elite guys and the guys who are just good. You know what I'm saying? And that's the big question. And when you get into the running back, I think you're right. I think the running back's a really important guy. But we saw a guy like LeSean McCoy last year who's really good in space, making guys miss, struggle because he was getting no help. So it begs the question, how valuable can he be when, A, there's not that much difference between the really great ones and just the good ones, and, B, when a guy who's, even if he's really good, needs so much help from his offensive line.
Hey, we'll talk more about this topic in the third and final hour of the show. After quarterback, what's the most valuable position on an NFL roster? And also next hour, we're going to talk with a longtime veteran offensive lineman in the NFL, Brian Baldinger, now with the NFL Network and Fox Sports. He does Baldy's Breakdowns on NFL.com. We'll talk with him about this topic and others as well. Come on back, an hour to go. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.